believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and fell in love with our community, the great voice of the Great Lakes, and his wife, Susie. He's worked for WJR for 30 years, and he's been its president and general manager since 1994. On September 21st of this year, he suffered a heart attack and calls it the most important day of his life. His name? Mike Feasey. Our own Mike Feasey. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with our own Mike Feasey, the president and general manager of WJR. Mike, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. What a privilege, and how fun it is to be in this seat after, has it been more than 3 years, hasn't it?
Almost 4 years, Mike.
Yeah, since that game of golf.
Yes.
Congratulations on what you've accomplished and all the wonderful people that have been in the studio as a result of your idea and your heart.
Well, you took a huge risk. I never asked to be the host. It was your suggestion, and it's been a great, great fun to do.
It's been great. I think the show has had a tremendous impact on a number of people for a whole lot of reasons. But to just take a little time out to celebrate something positive, something good, get away from hard news and talk about people's hearts and great accomplishments was a terrific idea, and I'm glad that we chose you to host this show. You've done a wonderful job, Jack.
Thanks. It's my honor. Can we start by talking about your parents?
Sure.
And your childhood?
Sure. Two of my favorite subjects. I grew up in a home that was so full of love that it was hard to believe. I know my parents had disagreements. I know that they didn't always like one another. I know they loved one another, but we never saw that. We never saw that as children. My father was gone a lot. He traveled extensively, and so I know he and my mother made a deal when they were, you know, first raising children and said, I'm not going to come home on the weekends and be the disciplinarian. I'm not going to come home and beat the kids. And so my mother really had a huge responsibility to raise my brother and myself and teach us all the things that we needed to learn and in a lot of cases take the place that a father would have taken, driving us places, attending games and all that kind of stuff, and I'm sure parent-teacher conferences and those kinds of events. And my father would come home on the weekends for the majority of my youth, and was a very, very dear, wonderful friend. Always respected him more than anyone in my life, and still do. And I lived in a home where the love for each other and the way you treated each other was, you know, the paramount virtue in our home.
If I've heard once, I've heard you talk 20 times about your dad, Robert Feasey, who was in public relations, and how he got involved with the city even before the rebellion, the riots.
Yeah.
Talk about that, Mike.
He must have always had a heart for others, Jack, for people that were disenfranchised. I subsequently learned not too long ago, there's a very dear friend that I heard him talk about often, who I had the chance to meet maybe a year ago. His name was Jimmy Jardak, and he was an Arab that had come to Detroit and was, I think, the only person of Arab descent in Northern High School. And he told me a story about a year ago that when he met my father, my dad was the only kid in school who talked to him. He kind of adopted him and brought him under his wing and you know, showed them around and helped them learn how to play basketball. And actually, they got in a play together. And so he must have always had that heart for people that were disenfranchised. I know I saw it, the way he treated people in need. The night the riots hit in 67, he left his full-time paid position and started with an organization for a two-year period called New Detroit. It was a group of civic community and government leaders who got together to try to figure out really what had caused this disruption in our community and why there was so much anger and frustration. And I'm pleased to say that 40 years later, I'm on the board of directors of that company. And he was a very, very special guy, Jack. You would have liked him a lot.
How was it you, Mike Feasey, broke into radio?
It certainly wasn't my path. I thought I wanted to be in the creative side of the business. I thought I wanted to produce commercials and television and movies and all that. I was always interested in entertainment. I liked to write. But I had an uncle who saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, and he said, you know, you might be pretty good in sales. And he said, I think you ought to try radio sales. At the time, he was either the general manager at CKLW or he was working for a network company, the Mutual Radio Network. But he said, I think you ought to try this. And I interviewed with everybody. No one would hire me without any experience until Bob Allison, a dear friend of ours, had a program called Ask Your Neighbor, and it was running. The program's still on the air, and it was running on WCAR in Garden City. And they needed somebody to help sell the program. It was a brokered program, and they needed someone to help sell it. And the general manager of the station introduced me to the people who ran Bob's show. And so I worked for Bob for about a year, learned the trade. Bob was a wonderful salesman, taught me a lot about sales. And about a year later, I wound up here.
We're talking to our own Mike Feasey. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was he got hired by JR in 1979. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Mike Feasey, who's been with WJR for 30 years as a salesman, general sales manager, president, cleaning person, on and on and on and on. How was it you ever got hired by WJR, Mike?
Persistence. I think I called the general sales manager at the time probably 5 or 6 times a day for a month before he would even see me. And I had a couple of friends that were trying to help. Bob Hines at the time was on the station, and he was a friend of a friend, and he was helping, and there were a couple other people that kept calling him. When I finally got in, I was able to explain to him that I didn't need anything. All I wanted was a chance. I grew up hearing about WJR. My father at the kitchen table would talk about that crazy JP and what he did today. And JR was always bigger than life as it is today. I thought that if you were going to be in the radio business selling radio time, you don't want to do this anyplace else. I still feel the same way today.
What did they pay you back in 79?
Believe it or not, it was a fortune. I actually didn't have any money. I was not making any money at the time that I took this job. And I'm a little embarrassed to say, but my starting salary in 1979 was $36,000, and I thought I had hit the lotto. And I think I called Susie after I caught my breath and said, you're never going to believe this. We're rich.
How'd you ever get Susie to marry you?
Boy, oh boy, you talk about the best sale in history. That was it, Jack. Persistence again. Yeah.
What makes WJR so special, Mike Feasey?
I think there's a lot of things, Jack, but maybe more than anything, it's a sense of responsibility combined with a great feeling of privilege. It's old-fashioned, I know, but it works, and it has always worked here. We have always felt that, along with this privilege of 50,000 watts, really unfettered access to millions of people's ears every day in a huge geographic region, along with that privilege, there's a huge responsibility because of the way you can impact and affect people's lives. And all those that have come before me understood that same thing. And so we've always been a voice for those in need. We've always been a voice of reason. We've always been a voice of comfort in troubled times. We're seeing that right now with all the uncertainty in the world, and especially right here in our own marketplace. We're seeing, you know, significant increases in our audience as people look for answers and want information. And we've always had a very special relationship with our listeners, and that's due to the personalities. This is not a format that we run. This is a whole group of different personalities who have relationships with listeners.
Speaking of personalities with relationships, yeah. What were the biggest things you learned from J.P. McCarthy?
Kindness. He was probably the most curious person I was ever around. Everyone used to say he knew a little about everything. And he did. He could talk to anybody about anything. And I think one of his greatest traits, which sometimes gets overlooked, was his ability to connect and communicate with Joe the plumber, as we'd say during these times, or the chairman of any company in this town. And he was also our guy. He was a Detroit guy that did good, and we all really liked him. He was easy to get along with. He was amazingly smart. He understood business, not just show business. He understood business. He was a dear friend. He was a mentor to me, and helped me a great deal throughout my entire career.
How was it you ever became the president and general manager?
I think there's a lot of people still asking that question, Jack. I guess I hung around long enough. It was clear to anybody that I worked for that I had a special passion for this place. It was more than a job. It was an extension of really what I believe in and how I think we should conduct our lives. And when you have the opportunity to do it as a career, I think that shows up. And I don't know, for some reason I was here at all the right times when people left or people retired or whatever, and it just worked out that way. It's been the greatest privilege anybody could have asked for in a work life.
A number of times you've said, and I quote, "I come at my job the same way as I come at my life, as that of a servant." Hmm. Please.
Well, on that, Jack, I probably fail more than I succeed, but I believe it is my responsibility to serve those around me. I'm not the best engineer. I'm not the best on-air talent. I'm not the best news person. I'm not the best salesperson. My responsibility is to provide the environment and the support and the encouragement for our people to become the best at what they do for us. It is my responsibility to serve them. It is my responsibility to provide them capital, as I say, encouragement, and the environment in which they can become everything that they were created to become. And so I feel that same way about life, as you said. I think all of us have responsibility to serve each other. And I've told my children, since they were old enough to understand, that the one way I will measure their success is if they put other people first. Because if you do that, everything else follows. the success follows. And I've tried to do that. As I say, I think I probably fail at that more than I succeed, but I wake up every day and try to do that again.
Speaking of your children,
mm-hmm.
Peter, Sam, and you have a daughter, Jessie.
Sure do.
And recently, a young man, Paul Carollo,
mm-hmm.
came to you and said, "Mr. Feezy, I'd like to ask your daughter for her hand in marriage."
Mm-hmm.
And Mike, you asked him one question, and that was, "Paul, are you finished being selfish?"
Right, right.
Why?
Well, I think when you make that kind of decision, and I believe that in both Paul and Jesse's heart, this is a lifetime commitment decision. This is not entered into lightly or with even the thought that if things go bad, don't worry about it, we can get a divorce. That's just not the way they think. And you have to be really sure that you're finished with yourself, because everything that you will do from that day forward, from June 20th on, for them, will have to go through the filter of another person. Even if it's as simple as, "I'm going to run out to the store," you have to be sure that doesn't impact the other person in a way that would disrupt their life or cause them concern. And so I think it's a critical, critical question to ask yourself, am I finished being selfish? Can I put everything in my life going forward through the filter of another person?
We're talking to Mike Feezy. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the morning of September 21st. I'm Jack Grisula. This is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to Mike Feezy, who suffered a heart attack on September 21st of this year while up north. Mike, take us back to that Sunday morning about 3 a.m.
Boy, Jack, it sounds funny even to hear that. You were there. You were uniquely qualified to experience this with me, and I'm forever grateful that you were there. As you know, we were up north hanging out with our little group of guys that we've been doing this for, I don't know, almost 10 years now, I guess. And we had played 36 holes on Saturday, had a big dumb guy dinner and watched some football. And Sunday morning, about 3 a.m., I woke up with pretty excruciating pain that I thought was indigestion or perhaps pulled muscles, kind of armpit to armpit across my chest. Went downstairs, tried not to wake you up, and had some Rolaids and some Tums, and nothing changed. It didn't get better, but it didn't get worse. And so when you and Rick Cole and Tim Codd woke up, we decided to go ahead and play golf, because it didn't get worse. And we went ahead and played golf. Sorry that you were my partner that day. Maybe the worst golf I've played in my entire life. Didn't feel well. Wasn't myself. Still had the pain. Was cranky, which is not really in my character too often. And so when we finished the golf, we decided to drive home, and still the pain was exactly the same as it was at 3 a.m. It didn't get worse. I didn't have shortness of breath. I didn't have shooting pains down my arms. I wasn't sweating. And so I did the best to convince myself that it wasn't a heart issue. But I kind of knew in the back of my mind that maybe it could be. Fortunately, Rick was with us, had a bunch of aspirin. I think I probably had maybe a half a dozen aspirin on the way home. I don't know if that did anything for me or not, but it couldn't hurt. When we got to Brighton and dropped Tim off, you were pretty good at encouraging me and convincing me that we really ought to get something looked at. And so I called John Popovich. He said, "It doesn't sound like heart, but go into the emergency room and find out anyway." And we did, and I think by the time you dropped me off at the door, and park the car, they had diagnosed what they called an acute severe heart attack, and indicated that I needed to take an ambulance ride downtown to the Henry Ford surgical room and have some doctors standing by, and that they would, as he put it, do what they can.
You've told me that that time from 7 p.m. Yeah. when they told you mm-hmm. to 9 p.m., those were the two longest hours of your life.
Yeah.
What did you think about?
It's amazing when you're in that position. For those people that have either been told they're having a very severe situation that could end their life, or they've gotten a diagnosis, a terminal diagnosis. You see it in the movies. You wonder what it would be like to go through it. And what occurred for me was, as you said, the most important 2 hours of my life, on a whole number of fronts, emotionally and spiritually, physically, really, really an important couple of hours. And I was completely alone. Jack, you were kind enough to go to my home and had the unpleasant duty of telling Susie and getting the kids round up and bringing them down to the hospital. But those 2 hours, and I was awake for all of it, I didn't put me asleep. You think about more than you possibly could imagine thinking about in a 2 hour window. And when you're all alone, you don't have the distractions. And it was kind of a blessing that I was alone, because I wasn't worried about, you know, how Susie was reacting, or, you know, the kids are upset or whatever. It was just very personal time. And I was able to prioritize, able to sort of come to terms with a lot of issues that maybe I've been wrestling with for a number of weeks, months, even years. And when you think you don't have all the time in the world, you get things straight pretty quick. So in that sense, no question, the most important couple hours in my life.
They put a stent in.
Right, right.
That was Sunday about 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
By Tuesday afternoon, you were home.
I was home. Yeah, I was home.
How have you changed, Mike, in the last month and a half because of this heart attack?
I hope it's not a knee-jerk reaction, and one that you know sort of fades in time. But I'm significantly calmer about those issues in life that I can't control than I was September 20th, and even most of September 21st. I look at all the things that everyone's dealing with right now, all the uncertainty that everyone's dealing with, and the losses that they've had in their own personal portfolios, the uncertainty about the auto industry and employment in this community and everybody else related to it, including us here. But those 2 hours helped me really prioritize the things in my life that I'm going to worry about. And they're not going to be the things I can't control.
Your family's a great love in your life.
Mm-hmm.
The team here at WJR on most days are loves of your life. And another love of your life has been the cabin up north.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a refuge for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've made the statement recently that I don't care if I ever go back to the cabin.
Yeah, that might be a little strong.
So
I do care if I go back. But it did change for me. Not everybody will understand this, but it was the one material possession in my life that really helped to identify me, and the one thing that I really cared about that was off limits. The only thing I cared about. I didn't care about cars, didn't care about clothes, didn't care about watches, didn't care about anything. The way I personalized that home in northern Michigan. And you've been there, and it's more than I ever dreamed I could ever have. But again, to go back to those 2 hours, it just doesn't have the same spot in my heart that it did September 20th. It doesn't mean as much to me as does my wife, my family, my children, my friends, my purpose. And so that was a big thing for me. Not everybody gets that, but that was a very big thing for me.
You and I have shared a lot of great, priceless experiences.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
And I really value our time together, and I admire you for a lot of reasons. Hmm. One of the biggest is that you can openly share your feelings, Mike Feasey. Mm-hmm. You have a soft heart, and you're man enough to share that. A lot of men can't do that.
Yeah.
How do you do it, Mike?
I don't know, Jack. I guess you learn from your father. Again, going back to, you know, my mother and father, I never felt unloved, no matter what I did. I made a lot of mistakes. I did a lot of bad stuff. I behaved the way I shouldn't. I you know, what every kid does. Sometimes I probably did worse. I was never concerned about getting in trouble. I was always concerned about disappointing my parents. And I think the example that they gave to me, Jack, of sort of unconditional love, allows you to put yourself at risk and to talk openly with people about how you do feel. I've had to be careful with that through the years because I can share my heart about really good things, and I can share my heart about things that trouble me. And so I've had to learn some tough lessons about not being as bold as I want to be and not hurting people's feelings by sort of just telling them the way I see it. But I think that's a direct result of what I experienced and what I saw in my parents and being comfortable and encouraged to do that.
We're talking to Mike Feasey, who has a great love for our community. Yeah. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with our own Mike Feasey, the president and general manager of the Great Voice of the Great Lakes. Mike, you love our community, and you've truly continued and enhanced WJR being a voice of those in need. Hmm. Why, Mike?
I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, Jack. Just with this job of privilege comes a huge responsibility. And I don't know how anybody can drive by or walk by or learn of or experience some of the things that break your heart in this community and not do anything about it. So those of us that have the ability and the platform have the responsibility.
You've given free airtime and plugs for numerous causes, mm-hmm. too numerous to mention, but you've really, really worked hard for Pastor Harvey Carey,
yeah.
who's the pastor of the Citadel of Faith Covenant Church. Talk to us about Pastor Carey yeah. and that church.
It's really more of a personal thing with Susie and I. The station hasn't been deeply involved in that. But a lot of it goes back to the legacy. My grandparents lived in the shadow of this building, and as a young child, I grew up in the shadow of this building, playing in the parks, and my parents went to Northern High School and were married at Metropolitan Church, which, by the way, is where my daughter and this wonderful young fellow, Paul Carolla, are going to be married, which is really exciting. And Harvey came here from Chicago. South side of Chicago. Sound familiar, Jack? And he came here to build a church that was non-denominational, that was non-ethnic, and to be a voice of change in Detroit. And I first learned about him after he visited the school that my daughter went to, and Susie and Jesse came home and said, you got to meet this guy. He's really interesting and wonderful and real committed. You know, he's all about fixing Detroit like you are. So we met several years ago, and through just watching his work, and him connecting with Elisa Johannan, who's a wonderful woman who's been in this community for 13 years, helping those in need, it was clear that they are the real deal. They've got great credibility, and so Susie and I have decided to come alongside them and try to help them accomplish their goals, which is to make the area code 48202 not the most dangerous area code in the city, but one that is a model for development. And it's kind of interesting what they've got going up there. They've got a freeze that they run and operate. They've got a deli that they run and operate, and they also just opened up a fresh produce market and have a fresh produce truck that they drive around. So it's wonderful what they're doing in the community to teach young people how to work.
Lisa Johannan is the executive director of Central Detroit Christian Community Development Corporation.
Right, yeah.
We're soon to celebrate Thanksgiving.
Mm.
What, Mike Feezy, are you most thankful for?
Second chances. September 21st.
We're in challenging times, Mike. I don't know that we really know the magnitude of the challenge we have ahead of us. Independent of whether you were for the president-elect or not, we all should say a prayer that he makes right choices, because one tough job he's going to take over on January 20th. Talk to us about getting through adversity.
Oh, Jack, I think you're probably the poster child for this. You know, you're so positive and you're so encouraging to others. And I think we just have to realize that the important things in life, the things that are going to stick, the things that are going to be talked about at our funerals, are not going to have very much to do with the stock market, with our business career, with how much money we made, how many toys we had, how many houses we had, whether we wore designer clothes or we bought our clothes at the Salvation Army Restores, which is a wonderful place to shop, by the way, and I think more people are doing that these days. But I think we just have to really, really look at the priorities of our life and know what sticks and know what's important and understand that even in these very, very tough times, there are things that we need to celebrate. We need to celebrate each other. We need to celebrate those people that are helping. We need to engage ourselves in opportunities to help others. And in that sense, we'll kind of forget about what our 401ks are doing for a while. And I've heard you say this, Jack, and I believe it too, that this is it's a critical time in America where we're going to learn to live within our means again. And that's an individual thing. That's businesses. It's community and governments. We've been out of control, and I see this as an opportunity for us to rein ourselves in, to adjust our lifestyles, and there's people that are going to do very, very well in this time of uncertainty. I read something the other day that 80% of the people who had stockbrokers are going to change stockbrokers. Well, that means all these people that are trying to help these people with money, they got to find new people. So that's going to be a boom industry. I think the alternative fuels and the new energy and emerging technologies in that field, it might be the .com of this era. And I also think people who are staying in their homes instead of selling them, they might look around and say, I need some new carpeting, or I need some new furniture, or I need to fix up the house. So there will be industries that will do very, very well and will adjust. This is America. We will recover. We're the strongest nation on the earth, and we'll figure it out. The world's not coming to an end.
You've met a lot of people that have had tremendous resilience.
Mm.
and we need that going forward, sure all of do. Us. What do those people have in common, Mike Feasey?
They got a. I think, Jack, it's an ability not to be deterred, not to be taken off track. I don't know how many times you've heard or read, you know, someone said, "You can't do that. There's no way. It's impossible. You'll ruin your life." And those typically, you hear those stories after someone has had tremendous success. You think about, you know, all the people that went bankrupt two or three or four or five times before an idea finally caught on. How many light bulbs Thomas Edison actually built before one worked?
Last question tonight, Mike Feasey. What advice would you give our young listeners this evening?
Know their gifts. Match their gifts with their everyday life. Understand what it means, I think, to make a difference. Think about your life in terms of beginning at the end. What's the legacy you want to leave? What do you want people to say about you in generations to come? And live your life accordingly.
Mike, I want to personally thank you for being a great friend, for giving me this opportunity, and for all you do for all of us in this community and the way you do it. Keep up the great work.
You must have run out of guests, Jack. It's a privilege to be with you.
Our guest next Sunday will be another great Detroiter, Joe Vaccari of Andiamos. Until then, I'm Jack Crisula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spalding.